Doctor Till I Die TV. Watch and subscribe on YouTube and listen on your podcast platform.
Hi everybody, Jerry Taggart here. Now be sure to watch Chris and Lester Till I Die TV by subscribing on YouTube and following them on social media for all the latest Leicester City news and information. Come on, you foxes!
Strap yourself in, because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
Afternoon, fellow Fox fans. How the devil are we? Got over it yet? Yeah, so close, but yet so far. But don't say I'm nothing if not good to you, because I've got a special show that I know is going to cheer you up this afternoon. We've got a special guest on, as you can see up above me here, Mr. Alan Smith. This gentleman.
Hi, Alan Smith here. Be sure to watch and listen to Chris on Leicester Till I Die TV. You can also subscribe on YouTube and various social media channels. Up the Foxes!
Indeed. And it's an In Conversation With. It's Alan Smith. A lot of people say the ex-Arsenal player. No. The ex-Leicester player. Isn't that right, Alan?
Of course. Yeah. Yes. I mean, once a Fox, always a Fox. And given it was my first club, it was a very special club and still is special to me.
Yes, it's as I say, I always have this argument with people, though it gets to a point where I have sort of a few children, but my eldest is a huge football fan. And whenever I do these sort of things, I always sort of say, like, oh, I'm going to be chatting to this player. And he's only sort of mid-20s. So if I go back to my youth, he doesn't remember anybody. And he's going, I know this place. Alan Smith. I went, yeah. He says, no, I don't think I know Alan Smith. I said, does FIFA? Oh, right, yeah. So the guy who does FIFA.
He knows your whole new audience.
It certainly was. Apparently he knows your speech, because he always used to play Leicester Career Mode, and apparently you have a 2-minute speech at the start of that.
Oh, I don't know. I just said the words. I didn't play the game. I don't know how it works, to be honest with you, but it's a pleasure to be involved in it.
It is. It's football, isn't it? And we love whatever football brings us, you know. But, Alan, I mean, you've had a great career. Although by these sort of day standards, you were very, I mean, you know, you said Leicester were your first club. You only had two clubs, Leicester and Arsenal, and you were there sort of both a long time. But it all started for you back at Alf Church. Tell us about that.
Yeah. I played for a Sunday team called Wast Hills, and it's actually where Birmingham City train now. They were lovely playing fields where the Birmingham University students used to train, and the groundsman there and part-time manager, because my dad helped manage it as well, he used to do the pitch because he was the groundsman, and he used to do the pitch at Alf Church, and he kind of got me, introduced me to them, and I was playing for the youth team, and then I played for the reserves, and then when I was about 17, I played one season in the first team in the Southern League, Midland Division, which was a really good standard. I had a great season there, learned so much, because, you know, it's so different playing against kids of your own age, your peers, to playing with and against grown men, and you have to learn quickly, and you do learn a lot in a short space of time. You have to learn to look after yourself physically and all the rest of it. It was invaluable for me that season at Alf Church, and you know, at that level of football, lots of scouts used to come. I mean, that place has never changed in the last 50 years. I went back there not too long ago, and the clubhouse is still there. There's a slope on the pitch, a famous slope. It's only a village, but they kind of punched above the weight in terms of their success and that. So, again, fond memories of that season I spent there.
And you were scouted, obviously, after that, and you came to what we like to think is the best team that you could have come to, and that was Leicester. And that was during the Jock Wallace years. It was Ian McFarlane, wasn't it, that came and scouted you?
Yeah, Ian came. Jock never saw me play, but he was willing to go on Ian's word. Ian was probably, I mean, all the scouts from Villa, Birmingham, Coventry, West Brom, all the Midlands ones, obviously Leicester, but Big Ian was the most persistent, I think. Ron Atkinson came when he was the manager of Manchester United, but Ian kept on coming, and finally they stumped up the cash. So
and wore you down.
Not the cash for me, but the cash for Leicester, and the cash for Alf Church, and it was £15,000 with about 7,000 add-ons for appearances, and they were never going to deny me that kind of chance, and they needed the money as well. So off I went.
And Leicester, we've got a bit of a good record at getting players from the lower leagues, haven't we?
Just fit, yeah.
You didn't get to play for Jock for long, though, did you? He left quite soon after you arrived. I'm not saying that the two things were related at all.
Well, I didn't play for him at all.
You didn't at all, right?
I signed, and then I reckon about 3 weeks after, he left for Motherwell, which immediately you're worried about that, because the manager that's decided you're good enough to come to the football club has gone, and you're thinking, what does that mean for me? As it turned out, Gordon Milne, who came across from Coventry, he liked me, and he actually cleared out a lot of Jock signings, a lot of Scottish boys. I mean, the dressing room was full of Scots, and he brought in his sort of players, and Alan Young, who was the centre forward, he left. I'll never forget Gordon calling me over pre-season. The first team were playing Northampton, and the reserves were playing Northampton on the adjoining pitch. And at half time, Gordon whistled, Alan, come on, you're coming on for the second half. And I scored a hat trick. Me and Gary Lineker up front. I scored a hat trick in the second half, and I was involved in the first team from then on, and played the opening game of the season against Charlton. So it worked out brilliantly well for me.
I remember those years, but I used to actually go to school with Gary Lineker, so that was my whatever happened to him?
I don't know. Not heard, hiding a hair of him. No,
he's doing something, I believe. But Charlton, that would have been your debut then, I take it. You've seen your debut.
Yeah. We lost 2-1, 2-0, something like that at home.
Yes.
Bill Anderson gave me man of the match in the Leicester Mercury, which I was quite pleased about. I think he was being kind, it was an amazing occasion for me, because just a few months before, I was playing in front of 200 people at Alf Church, and then all of a sudden, I won't say it was a full Filbert Street, but there were a lot of people there for me anyway, and I did okay. It was a brilliant day for me.
I mean, there is Filbert Street. I mean, it was a grand old ground, wasn't it? But there was an atmosphere about it, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. You know, the double decker in there. You know, to score in front of that was a great thrill. And you know, the pitch was always in good nick, which was great. I remember Steve, the groundsman. He later went to Wembley because he was a really talented boy. But I loved playing there. It was a special place. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. So, like I say, you never played for Jock. Did you get to do the hill at all? Because that was
no.
That was probably a relief to you, was it?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of Jock's ideas, obviously, and Gordon had ideas of his own. So, because Gordon came from Liverpool under Bill Shankly, so it was very much around small-sided games, five-a-sides and that, which we all loved, of course. We did our fair share of running and that, but not quite, you know, what Jock wanted.
And there were quite good times under Gordon Milne, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. We obviously we got promoted in my first year there. It went down to the last game of the season. We'd pegged back Fulham, who were front runners all year.
Yeah.
And then we drew at home against Burnley in front of a full house. It's a really hot afternoon. And with that 0-0 draw, we thought we'd gain qualification. We thought we'd gain promotion. And we were kind of celebrating in the dressing room. And then word came through from Derby County that there'd been an appeal because the fans invaded the pitch before the end. And the ref just blew his whistle after about 89 minutes. So Malcolm McDonald, the Fulham manager, complained quite rightly, really. So, you know, we're popping the champagne corks and Gordon Mills come in and said, hold on, lads, you know, put the champagne away. There's been an appeal. We might not be promoted. As it was, we went to Spain, I think, that following week for a little end of season jolly. And that's when we heard that we were up in the top flight. So that was brilliant.
A few sangrias were downed when you got the news through.
Yeah, San Miguel, I think it was at the time.
That was pre La Manga days. We should just make that make that clear. We're welcome back there yet or not, to be honest with you. How was that first season for you in the top flight?
Difficult. I mean, I took a bit of time to get started. I think Gordon left me out after a few games. And it was quite useful to have a look from the outside, just, you know, have more of a look at what was going on out on the pitch. But once I got my first goal, you know, I was okay. It's belief, really, because, you know, 12 months before that, I was playing up against non-league defenders. All of a sudden, playing against the best defenders in the country. So it's a big step up. And confidence plays a part, a big one, especially for strikers. Once I got a few goals, I was off and running.
I think I'm always wary about quoting Wikipedia because half the time I say, somebody has so many appearances. And they say, no, actually, I didn't. I had this. But it says you got 13 goals in your first season, which wasn't a bad return for a team coming up.
Yeah, that might have been league goals. I'm not quite so sure. But I was pleased because, you know, we're always up against it. We're always kind of looking down rather than up, trying to stay above the drop zone. So it's not as if we dominated matches, but we did score goals because there's me, Gary and Stevie Linux on the wing. Quite often we get 50 goals between us, which, you know, was a great weapon for the club.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have Steve Linitz on sort of quite often because we always remind him. I don't know if he was still there when he did the swimming lesson at Southampton. Those were the days when footballers were men. That's what I say. You had your time there. Gordon Milne, like I say, you mentioned Gordon Milne there. He came in and was completely different to Jock. I mean, it was like you couldn't really get more chalk and cheese.
No. Well, I mean, I didn't play under Jock, so I don't know. You know, the likes of Gary Lineker spoke well of him, spoke fondly of him, but it was a different style of football, I think, different style of management. Maybe the old Scottish hairdryer didn't come on in the way it did with Jock and obviously Alex Ferguson in later years. Gordon had a slightly calmer way of talking to the players. But I learnt a lot off him. You know, he was a very knowledgeable man with that background that he had, played for England as well. So, he was a great manager for me. He really was. And he kind of fostered that relationship between me and Gary. It was brilliant,
I mean, you know, I think he was very underrated as a manager, if I'm honest with you. I think, like you say, There were never easy times because we always had to be a selling club, didn't we? We could never sort of, I mean, you know, completely different to the Leicester that, you know, we know and see today. But, and eventually you did move on to Arsenal, but you came straight back to Leicester.
Yes. it was a strange situation, really. Went down on deadline day, which was the third Thursday of the March. That was traditionally deadline day. So we played QPR at Filbert Street on the Wednesday night, and I went down with Ken Fryer, the Arsenal managing director, straight after, stopped at his house, and in the morning had negotiations and signed. But then they said, well, we'd like you to go back to, well, Arsenal said, we've agreed that you can go back to Leicester to help in the relegation fight. So kind of the two clubs got the best of both worlds. Like, yes, Arsenal had secured my signature before I became a free agent, and Leicester had got the money in the bank, but they'd still got me to try and help avoid relegation. But it didn't quite happen. Oxford United, last game of the season at the Manor Ground, dreadful game. And we were depending on other results anyway. So I think we drew, but we were down. And it was horrible, really, because, you know, the lads are absolutely distraught. And I'd got an end-of-season dinner with Arsenal down in London that evening. Yeah. And it was a black tie event. So I brought my dicky bow with me. So I had to jump in the shower, put the dicky bow on, and I had to jump in my car going down to London. So that was the way my Leicester career ended. It was a strange one, but it was a shame that you know, obviously we got relegated, but we, as I said, we were always fighting against it, you know.
Yes, yeah, but you actually, I think that's it. You actually played against Arsenal while you were technically signed to Arsenal.
I did, yeah, I did, which was the strangest match of my career. Yeah, yes. And I don't think really it happens now, does it?
No, you know, whenever somebody
is loaned out, they never play against their parent club. So going down there, I wasn't looking forward to it. I said to the gaffer, I says, you know, obviously I'm not going to play on Saturday, boss. It's Arsenal. And he went, oh, yes, you are, Alan. We need the points desperately. So, I had to get on with it. But, you know, both sets of supporters started singing my name at one point.
So I was going to ask that.
Yeah, that was weird. And it was difficult to concentrate on the game, really, because of that kind of stuff. Gary McAllister, I remember, gave me a bit of a bollocking because I was waving to the North Bank. But, you know, that was my club. That was where my future lay. And yes, I did try really hard to, you know, to contribute and help avoid the drop. I did get quite a few goals towards the end, but it didn't work out, sadly.
And you hopefully, you didn't want to say hopefully, that's not, but I mean, it's all history now. You didn't score in that game, did you?
I didn't know, actually. Yeah. The keeper, Rhys Wilmot, who was the keeper at the time, he was a sub-keeper, but he made a really good save from a point-blank header. So I nearly scored at the North Bank, but I think we lost 4-1. I don't know who scored our goal, but anyway, there we have it.
No. Now, that would have been even weirder, wouldn't it, if you'd have scored? Yeah. But I suppose if you'd have scored and they'd have won, then you're getting the best of both ends. But we sold, while you were there, we'd sold Gary. Alan had gone off to Everton, and you had a few partners. Mark Bright was one of your main partners. Was it ever the same after Gary left?
It was different, obviously, and I had a more kind of central role to play. The responsibility was on me more to get the goals, and I did score more goals because you just kind of were able to get into those positions that Gary might have run into, you know, a near post run or whatever. Whereas I fed off Gary's movement a little bit. But I mean, Bright, you say about Brighty, but I didn't play with him too many times. We were too similar in styles. Steve Moran came to the club, and I think that was seen as the number one partnership for a time. I'd played with Tommy English and Steve and Brighty. I mean, to lose a player of Gary's abilities, it was always going to be difficult. You know, and we survived the first year without him, and then the second year we didn't. It might have been the same story with him, you know.
Yes,
who knows?
No. But like I say, after being shared between the two clubs, you finally made your move to Arsenal. It started off rather well with a hat trick and a 6-0 win.
Well, we played three games before that without a win. Liverpool at home lost 2-1, and we lost to Man United, drew against QPR. Three games without a win, and already the newspapers were saying that Arsenal were after this striker or that striker because I hadn't settled, I hadn't scored. And that was the noticeable difference, you know, between playing for Leicester and between playing for Arsenal, kind of that scrutiny in the papers and that. Yeah. The fourth game I got a hat trick against Portsmouth, so that was nice, and that got me going. That settled things down.
Was there any other teams in for you, or was it, I mean, like you say, you were coming to the end of your contract, but was it Arsenal, or was there a choice for you?
Alex Ferguson rang me up one night when I was at home. My mum answered the phone, so she got a bit of a shock, but he wanted me to wait till the end of the season, and I'd kind of already made up my mind I was going to join Arsenal, and I said, well, sorry, Mr. Ferguson, I've agreed to, well, I've got it in my mind that I'm going to join them now and sign, you know, before the end of the season. So, but of course, back then they weren't that successful and they didn't win the league till 93, was it? I think they first won the league, whereas we won it in 89 and 91. So who knows, if I had joined them, how my career would have gone. And I think I made the right choice in the end.
You've certainly no regrets, I would imagine. But when you get that call and you say it's Sir Alex Ferguson, do you go through the, like, yeah, come on, mate, you know, he's one of your friends ringing you up, winding you up, or?
Not really. I could tell it was him. I could tell it was him. He just got that way about him. I was just, it wasn't a long phone call, to be honest, because once he'd heard that I'd made up my mind, that was it, really. I spoke to Chelsea as well. I spoke to Ken Bates and John Hollins, who was the manager. They came up to Birmingham to have a chat. Again, I said to Ken Bates, thanks a lot, but I think my heart's set on Arsenal.
And you had... This is sticking in my throat, I'm going to be honest with you, but you had many successful years at Arsenal. Was there anything you didn't win while you were there? Is that easier to ask you?
No, we won all the domestic trophies and we won a European trophy. We got the full set. I mean, as a footballer, there's a big element of fortune as to how many medals you come out with, no matter how good you are, because if the club is not winning stuff, I joined Arsenal at the time just when things were beginning to take off, and they got to the Littlewoods Cup final. They'd beaten Liverpool. There were a clutch of youth team players coming through, led by the likes of Tony Adams, David Vocastle, Michael Thomas. And it looked like things were starting to happen. And that played a part in my decision to join.
And of course, you made it into the England team. Was it Graham Taylor, manager at the time?
No, Bobby Robson.
Bobby Robson. So you came at the end of the Bobby Robson era. We know what we've just seen, sort of how England sort of were unlucky, but they can lift the nation. Is it when you play for England, and I'm sure it might be different these days, but it's not about the money, is it? It is about pulling that shirt on.
Well, it's definitely not about the money, no. I mean, I think we got £400 match fee or something, but you're not thinking about that. To be fair, I think it did make a difference to your earning potential then rather than now. You know, you could maybe negotiate a better contract and a better boot deal, but it was mainly about representing your country, about the pride of doing that. I loved it. Yeah, I loved it. I made my debut against Saudi Arabia, came on as a sub. Yeah. We only drew that 1-1. The papers were getting at Bobby Robson at the time. They wanted him out. He obviously went on to Italia 90 and we nearly got to the final. But, yeah, you do feel the kind of pressure definitely playing for England, and that's why it's been so good to see the lads playing with a bit more freedom in the Euros. You know, Gareth Southgate's managed to lift that off him a bit, which is not an easy thing to do.
And I forgot to mention, while you were at Arsenal, of course, two seasons running, you won the Golden Boot.
Yes, I did, yes. Well, not two seasons running, in 89 and 91, our two title seasons.
Sorry, it was indeed, yes.
I mean, I'd never thought I would win that award because being the sort of player I was, back to goal, you know, and somebody like Gary Lineker... Yeah. Gary always running onto it, always facing up. But very proud of that. Yeah, very proud to have done it not once but twice. So, but even better, the fact that it contributed to two title wins.
Well, you couldn't ask for more, really, could you? You know, but going back to England, we talked about your debut. And I'm not sure whether this was your final match. It was certainly Gary's final match, the 2-1 loss to Sweden.
It was my final match as well, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
and that, I mean... Sorry, carry on.
I was just going to say, we needed a goal against Sweden. It was the last group game, and I got told to warm up alongside with Alan Shearer, a young Alan Shearer. Yeah. We were running up and down the line, but then I got a call back, and I've whipped my tracksuit off, but it's only then you see the number go up, and it's Gary coming off, so you're surprised, but you haven't got time to think about it too much, you know.
No.
England needs you. We needed a goal, so I've just gone on there trying to concentrate on what I had to do. But, you know, at the end of it, it didn't quite work out, and it was Gary's last game. And little did I know at the time, it was mine as well. I didn't get picked again. So that's the way it ended, unfortunately.
It was. It was a sad end, and unfortunately, you'll always be remembered because Gary never quite got that target. And I think Graham, again, you know, England managers, it's got to be one of the hardest jobs in the world, 10 times worse than any club manager out there. But he took some stick from the press, and for taking Gary off as well, you know. And but had you gone on and scored, of course, it's those thin line margins, isn't it? You know, you got on scored, he would have been a hero, you know, and you'd have been a hero. And things might have been different, you never know. But, you know, but it's great. I mean, just talk about while we're on the topic of England. Again, Gareth's taken a bit of stick going into these finals for his team choices and then his squad choice as well. But, you know, we didn't get beaten in any game during, you know, normal play. We only conceded 2 goals. We topped our group. We were in the final. There was nothing more I don't think he could have done. And I think if we can keep hold of Gareth, my worry is that we lose him. But for me, I think if we can keep hold of him and that young squad that he's got and everybody moves sort of forward together, I think the future is very bright for England.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I don't think he'll want to hang about forever. He mentioned that the other day, but you know, the World Cup in 2022, it's only next year now, isn't it?
Yes,
you know, that's going to be a goal, and then depending on how things go, maybe the Euros again, we'll have to wait and see. But he's been a brilliant asset for this country on and off, you know, the pitch, what he does with the team and how he speaks. He's been a great ambassador, and he's lifted the nation, never mind about, you know, football-loving fans, because there was a time not so long ago when there was an apathy, you know. We all got a bit cynical about the England team, hadn't we? And now
definitely
we like them, you know, the players involved. And they have done us proud, really, as disappointing as it was the other night. So, let's hope we can go, you know, the next step and actually win something.
It's hard, and you must see this as you go around sort of with Sky, but when you look at the managers, being a good league manager doesn't necessarily make you a good international manager. And I think, you know, Gareth will be the first to admit his managerial career at league level never really took off, but he's been an amazing manager at national level. And I just hope he just stays around as long as we can keep it into. Because I think, you know, when you look in the past, we've let managers go much too early. You know, Terry Venables, probably Bobby Robson, and, you know, definitely. My mind's gone. It was Chelsea manager, Glenn Hoddle. I think they sort of left sort of too early and for different reasons, but. That's the FA, I guess, for you, isn't it, really? You know, but that, you know, you finally ended the career. I believe that when your time was coming up at Arsenal, you had the chance to carry on your career, but you decided that was the time you wanted to end it.
No, didn't have a choice. No. I remember.
Again, I apologise. That's Wikipedia for you.
you can't rely on it. No. I tore my cartilage in the January at Millwall in a cup tie, and then I had an operation. And when I did, they found there was damage to the bone, top and bottom. tried to repair it, and it just didn't work. So I had another scan. We went to China on an end of season tour. Then when I came back, I got the results of the scan. And he said, really, you know, if you want to have any quality of life, you need to pack up now. But I knew I knew I had to pack up. I knew I couldn't go on because it just didn't feel right. So it was, yeah, devastating moment, like it is for any footballer when he's told that kind of news. And I was 32, so I wanted to go on for a good 3 years longer or more. All my teammates did, you know, all the back four did, and went on late into the 30s. So that makes it even harder, really, to see your mates carry on playing. But, I had to think about doing something else and think about it quickly.
And, I mean, coming on, we sort of spoke before we came live and joking, like, my son and you know, people of his age know you more for sort of the FIFA. And you replaced another legend there because you replaced Andy Gray as Martin Tyler's partner. Is that weird? You were saying, did you record set phrases? How did they do that? I've always been fascinated how they do that.
Well, it's not scripted. I mean, you're given a long list of things to describe, but you describe it in your own words, and you have to describe it, you know, five or six different ways so that you don't get the same phrase coming up over and over again, which used to happen in the early days. So you have to kind of think on your feet quite quickly because you're doing it one after the other. We loved it. You know, Martin did it longer than I did, and when Andy left Sky, I went for an audition and got the job, and did it for 9 years, which I absolutely loved. It's kind of you're in the studio for 4 or 5 hours on the trot, and at the end of it, your head's spinning a bit because you have to concentrate, and you know, there's a lot of talking and that, and you have to you kind of give it that drama to your voice, because you are just sat there. You're not looking at pictures. You're not describing action or anything. It's all imagination. So, I love doing it. Absolutely loved it. And you're right. You know, kids would come up to you and ask for a photo or autograph. You know, a 12-year-old who'd never know you as a player. He'd never know you from Sky, really, but he recognised you from FIFA.
From FIFA, exactly.
People still come up and say that.
A whole new audience. We mentioned it there, Sky, co-commentator and pundit. Again, how did that come? Were you approached or?
No. When I was a player still and I was injured, I would be a guest on a live match, you know, an Arsenal live match. So I had a relationship with them. So when I retired, I just did more and more studio stuff and other bits as well. Started working for Soccer Saturday, doing the InVision stuff around the grounds, and then got into co-commentary. So it's been brilliant to still be involved in the game in this way. You know, to be at the big occasions, the great atmospheres. That's what players miss, and I've been lucky because I've still had that adrenaline as well. You know, working in live TV, you get a real buzz. And alongside that, I wrote for the Telegraph for 20 years, so I went to four World Cups and four European Championships. So again, that was fantastic.
Yeah, and I know, you know, Gary got Ofcom complaints because he was over exuberant in cheering because Leicester won the FA Cup. Do you, when whether it's Leicester or Arsenal, but when you're commentating on those games, do you have to hold yourself back if the team score?
Well, you just try and do your job. I mean, you're not you don't want to show your allegiance too much because you're trying to represent the other side as well and the supporters watching, you know. So you try and be as fair as you can. You know, I mean, it's a bit different for Gary. He's a Leicester boy, isn't he? Born and bred. Yeah. And that's his team that he supported as a boy. I mean, I was a Villa fan when I was a boy. I'm from Birmingham. And as much as I want Leicester and Arsenal to do well, when you're commentating on their games, you just try and be fair, really, and call it as you see it. That's all you can do.
No, that's understandable. Oh, I forgot. My mind's gone blank now. So when you sort of with Sky, do you sort of look at the teams now and you look at the clubs and, you know, going back to Leicester, the Leicester that you're commentating on is completely different to the Leicester that you played for. Do you kind of wish you were playing for Leicester now instead of then, or were they sort of, I mean, you know, it's a different world, I guess, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't think like that. I mean, I'm just delighted that, first of all, Leicester managed to win the title. I mean, what a year was. They always put me on Leicester games towards the end when it looked like, you know, the boys were going to do it. So I did all the, those great games, and I did the Everton game at the end. But I think, you know, everybody was just so thrilled that something like this could still happen, that one of the so-called lesser clubs could beat all the big boys. So, I absolutely loved it. And then I've been so pleased that they've been able to build on that, and it just wasn't a one-off. And, you know, behind the scenes, the recruitment's been second to none, such a well-organised club. And they've managed to now become that kind of top six club on a regular basis and, you know, top four if things go well. So, it's been a brilliant success story in the end. Just shows that it can be done if you're very smart in how you go about things.
I think, you know, we did that, and certainly did that with the league. We showed, like you say, no disrespect, lesser clubs, that it can be done. You know, it's not going to happen all the time. But were you surprised when Brendan came to Leicester? I mean, the classic one is Chris Sutton saying that he was taking a step backwards. But, you know, he's made the right decision, hasn't he?
I think Brendan looked at the players there and the age of the players as well. The fact that they were only going to get better. And because he is such a good coach, he obviously thought, well, I can improve these players. And I've got great material to work with. So it was, an attractive, a really attractive job. And as it's turned out, it was a great decision on his part. Yeah. A great decision. And I think he's loved every minute of it. I really do.
Can you see him leaving? I mean, I know obviously Tottenham were rumoured to be after him, as were Arsenal for a bit possibly as well. Or there's no vacancy at Arsenal, of course. He's got such a good relationship with the, as we saw after the FA Cup with the owners. I can't see what he would get if he did move. But there's going to be some club, I suppose, at some point that's going to come in and tempt him away.
Yeah, of course, nothing lasts forever, does it? And you know, if he must think back to that Liverpool season when they could have easily won the league, and if he could get back to one of the biggest clubs in the country, and Leicester are willing to let him go, you know, there's a fair chance that would happen.
Yes.
I mean, these days, it's so much different to back in our time, where a manager of Leicester would have got paid a lot less than some of the top ones at the big clubs. But now Leicester can afford to reward a very talented coach, and he has been rewarded. So from a financial point of view, it's not one of those where he's looking to earn more money, I don't think.
No.
But, you know, there might come a time where he feels he's done as much as he can at Leicester. But, you know, let's hope that's not in the near future.
No, fingers crossed. You touched on before sort of Leicester's recruitment policy and how they go about that. I mean, the two signings we've made, Daka and Samara, amazing signings.
Yeah, I mean, if you go on how they have recruited players before that we hadn't really heard too much about, and they've been these household names, then if it happens again, I mean, brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. Whether Leicester will sell anybody, I don't know. I mean, Madison keeps getting linked to Arsenal.
Well, that was going to be my next question, actually. Can you see Madison and Tillemans stopping?
You'd look on maybe selling one. I mean, Rodgers would be very reluctant to let two go, especially from the same area of the pitch, you know.
Yes.
That would be a body blow. But, you know, you have to turn things over, don't you? Freshen things up. And it looks like they're doing that again, the boys.
I mean, if it happens, I mean, I always say, like, you know, I didn't want Harry Maguire to go, you know, I didn't particularly want Ben Chilwell to go, but I thought they were both great players for us. But when you're being offered 80 and 50 million pounds, there comes a price, and they say every player's got the price. And, you know, we seem to be, and it does annoy me as a fan a little bit, that every year it seems to be like, what you know, Leicester player's going to go to a so-called top six club this season. But, you know, these players are out there. It's just, it must be something wrong with the scouting systems at the bigger clubs that they're not finding them. They prefer, I think, to buy the ready-made article.
No, it's a good point. There's that element of uncertainty when you're buying these. Mm. I suppose it is a calculated gamble.
Yeah.
But it's a gamble that's paid off for Leicester. Obviously, there's a lot of skill involved as well, and all that research, all those stats on a player's performance over a couple of years comes into play. But you never know until they get there, you know. N'Golo Kanté walks through the door and he looks like a little trainee, doesn't he? Somebody mistakes him for that with his little rucksack on it. And you know, you're bringing him into the top, you know, kind of the hurly-burly world of the Premier League. Yeah. There must have been a question, can he cope with it? But I mean, you know, we know how that went. So you never quite know, but you just have to have a good guess.
Yeah. There's a question just come in here. Did you ever have or had to think about ever going into coaching or managing at all?
I didn't really. It was never something that interested me, kind of that the coaching side. I never wanted to take my badges. I mean, the thing is, I went into the media side of it, and I had work, and I just got my head down and got stuck into that. So I think some players, you know, they don't know what else to do and they go into coaching and they're either good or bad at it. But it was never something that really appealed to me.
That's understandable. And just to finish on now, just to touch on it, the European Super League and the so-called Big Six. I mean, I always say, you know, I don't know if Leicester will ever be thought of as a Big Six club, even if we're finishing fourth, fifth, third, wherever. But we could possibly make it a Big Seven. But, you know, I don't think it's going to go away, this. I think it's, you know, it's going to come back further down the line in a different form. But it's not good for sort of football here. That it's the pyramid system, like yourself coming through it, that all that's just going to get completely hurt, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of, you know, the teams in Spain and Italy wanted it and needed it more than our clubs did.
Yeah.
But having said that, you know, our clubs agreed to it, but they're in a lot of debt, aren't they? Barcelona, Real Madrid. Yeah. They're not generating the TV revenue that we are. But we've just got to get safeguards in place to prevent it happening again. You know, we all saw the public reaction.
Well,
and that surprised everybody. Well, it certainly surprised, you know, the American owners at Liverpool and Man United. So, you know, I was so upset, depressed, worried about it when it first came to prominence. And it looked like it was going to go through, didn't it? It looked like they were just going to bulldoze the way through. But thank God it didn't.
I know. It was sort of... It was one of those things, a bit like, unfortunately, when the chairman passed away, and there was a coming together of the fans that certainly we felt as Leicester fans at the time, you know, even from Forest and Derby fans, you know, the scarves and the thoughts and the well wishes. And then this came along and this brought the fans together again. And two different things completely. But, you know, with that European top six, you've got Liverpool and Man United fans agreeing, and Tottenham and Arsenal fans agreeing that they didn't want to do it. And it's like, if nothing else, it's brought fans together.
Yeah, it has. And if you ask me for one of the best and the most emotional moments of last season, it would be Leicester's FA Cup win and when the owner came down, and there's that bond with the players. It was just fantastic, you know. It was just very special because you could see that it was so authentic. You don't see that at all much in the modern game. So that was just a reminder, wasn't it, of what we might have been kind of brushing away. And that was brilliant.
I think the thing is as well is how many owners from other clubs, and I've been speaking to this with you know, a lot of fans on other channels. We do a lot of sort of, you know, share, you know, we go on each other's shows. And when I'm talking to sort of Arsenal fans, they don't think their owner's ever been to a game. I mean, you know, Abramovich, love him or hate him, he turns up to games when he can and when he's allowed to. But, you know, a lot of these players, they haven't, fans haven't seen their owners at the club. And there was our owner down on the pitch, jumping up and down with the players. As Ian Wright, you know, another ex-Arsenal player, he was jealous of it. You know, it is something special that Leicester have got.
Yeah. No, it is. It is special. I mean, Stanley Cronkite has been to a few Arsenal games. I don't really think he knows too much about football or particularly likes it. It's another business in his portfolio, really. He's got a lot of sports clubs, hasn't he? But yeah, I think all football fans would have been jealous of that, especially at the time that it happened. Everybody wants that kind of, nobody's a perfect owner, but you know, Leicester have got something pretty close to it
as you can get.
Exactly. So, you know, you've got to nurture that, haven't you?
And
I think we all felt a bit envious of that.
Yeah. And I think being Leicester fans, we know we've had so many years that are, where it hasn't been good, that, you know, for those of us of a certain age, we're just enjoying it and going along with the ride and totally loving it. As I have loved having you on today, Alan, thank you so much for coming on. I really do appreciate this. Do take care of yourself.
And thank you very much. No, it's been great. It's been great to come on and talk about the old times. I'll never forget them, those days at Filbert Street.
You know, and this is what we say for fans. You know, there's days we don't forget, but the players don't forget these days either, do they? They're happy memories. Well, hopefully,
big part
happy
of
memories.
Your life. Yeah, you know. Yeah, they are. Very happy memories. You know, everybody from the laundry lady who recently passed away, bless her. You know, to the lady up in the players' lounge who used to do the pork pies and the sandwiches. You know, these people are part of the fabric of the club, and Leicester have always retain that homely feel, and you know, long may that continue.
Alan, I'll let you go. Thank you so much. Like I say, good luck for the coming season. Not to Arsenal, of course. I would never say that on when it can be edited and copied and used against me, but I bet you can't wait for the season to start. Have a good one, stay safe wherever you travel, and thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Chris. All the best.
Take care, stay safe. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, Alan Smith there, great. Oh, what a pleasure to talk to the guy, and such a nice guy. I tell you, it's one thing about this job, and there was reasons I started doing this. Those that know me, excuse me, personally, will know why I started doing this channel, as I'm sure I'm no different to a lot of other people that have started doing it this past 12 months. But they're my heroes. You know, when I went down, as you know, those that know me again know I went to school with Gary Lineker. Gary Lineker and Alan Smith, when I started to follow Leicester, they were the two main strikers. You know, the Shearer and the Owen of the day for Leicester. And to come up with things like that and just to be able to speak to him, it's like, you don't know. I'm sat here. I'm literally sat here with a semi. That's all I'll say. Okay. Alan, thank you so much for coming on. I'm going to be back. What time are we on now? 10 to 6. I'm going to be back on at 7 with Craig, if I've calmed down by then, when we're going to be looking at our best ever goalkeepers at Leicester City. He's picked his top 5 and he'll pick his best. Will you agree with Craig? You never know. We'll tune in and see. Dan, they say never meet your heroes, but I wouldn't let you not meet me, mate. You're a hero to me. What can I say? You are. No, we'll just leave it there. We'll leave it there. Not only am I back later on with the give me 5, we've also got this coming up soon.
It's the Big Fat Football Quiz with Leicester Till I Die TV.
So you think you know your football?
Well, let's see.
Starts on Thursday. It's a regular quiz we're going to be doing a couple of weeks. And we're going to start with Leicester City. And then Dan, who you just saw come up with the comment, he's going to be representing Burnley. And we're going to have a leaderboard, a bit like the Top Gear star in a reasonable price cast or to board and see who's going to be at the top and who knows their football stuff. Not just questions on their teams, questions on the Premier League, questions on Leicester as well. So they've not only got to know, they're going to have 10 questions on, say, for example, Burnley, they're going to have to answer 5 questions on Leicester. Yeah, that'll get them doing their homework. This has been Leicester Till I Die. This has been
on YouTube and your favourite podcast platform. This is Leicester Till I Die TV. In conversation with...
It was Alan Smith, and hopefully we're going to have Steve Linex coming up soon as well, so who used to play with Alan Smith. So we should have got them on together, really. That would have been good, wouldn't it? Right, time to go. Thanks for joining us. Thanks so much to Alan for coming on. Was amazing, and really enjoyed having him on. I'll see you at 7, hopefully, with Craig, and we're going to be looking at all Leicester City goalkeepers. Guys, stay safe, and I'll see you in an hour and 7 minutes. And counting.
Hello, good night. Matt Elliott here. Be sure to watch Leicester Till I Die TV on YouTube and follow all their social media platforms for all the latest updates and news on Leicester City Football Club.
Thanks for watching Leicester Till I Die. This is Chris saying goodbye and see you next time.
Fun doesn't have to stop here. If you have any questions, suggestions, or feedback, head over right now to Twitter and Facebook and like, share, and get involved. Join us next time.